Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's program. And this program is done in partnership with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. And this is part one of Living with Metastatic Triple Negative Breast Cancer, and the title of today's program is Metastatic Triple Negative Breast Cancer Strategies to Cope. Today's program is made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, an independent grant from Merck and Company, Inc., and a grant from Genentech. And really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I just want to score with you how many people are on the call and what countries are on the call as well. So we have over 300 participants on the call, primarily from the United States, from both rural, urban, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a number of international participants from different countries. I'll just name them. Algeria, Benin, Dominican Republic, Ghana, Japan, Kenya, South Africa, and the United Kingdom. So it's a global call. So we have people from all over the world on the call today. And really, we're delighted that you're all participating on this call today, and we hope you'll learn a lot from our speakers and from participating today. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Jessica Trevino-Jones. Dr. Jones is breast medical oncologist, Mays Cancer Center, associate professor, Division of Hematology, Oncology, University of Texas Health Science Center at San Antonio, Director of Cancer Risk Reduction and Education Program, UT Health San Antonio MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Jones will be addressing updates on the treatment of triple negative breast cancer, novel treatment therapies, including sequencing of treatment, biomarkers, diagnostic testing, and genomics, why they are so important, and the role of precision medicine in improving treatment decisions. It's really my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Jones.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, for that lovely introduction. And thank you to everybody on the call for your being here today and taking this moment to advocate for metastatic breast cancer. So I'd like to start with the opportunity to do some updates on the treatment of triple negative breast cancer. For a long time, triple negative breast cancer was limited. It was limited because, unlike the other forms of breast cancer, it lacks markers. What I mean to say is we know that it does not hold estrogen, progesterone, or HER2. These three different tumor markers are often utilized to direct different treatments. But triple negative breast cancer, because it lacks those, often had to rely on chemotherapy. Chemotherapy, the traditional long-standing treatment for cancer, can be best described as a blanket treatment, medication that is meant to kill all rapidly dividing cells, which is good when we think about cancer, but oftentimes holds side effects for even non-cancerous cells that are rapidly dividing. In other words, your hands, your skin, your mouth, things like this. But ever since the advent now of immunotherapy, targeted therapy, and drug antibody conjugates, all of which I will touch on in the next 10 minutes, we have been able to change the treatment of metastatic triple negative breast cancer beyond what we ever could have imagined even 5 years ago. In 2020, the FDA did approve the use of pembrolizumab, or a form of immunotherapy, for the treatment of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. Immunotherapy is a form of targeted treatment. It is not chemotherapy, but immunotherapy utilizes your own immune system to help kill cancer cells. This immunotherapy, the generic name pembrolizumab, the brand name Keytruda, is now recommended to be first line whenever we treat metastatic breast cancer if a patient has a certain marker called PD-L1. So what am I talking about? Here I was just saying that triple negative breast cancer didn't have targets. It didn't have markers. We're learning more than ever about different ways to see what is on the outside of cancer cells. Specifically for triple negative breast cancer, because there is no estrogen on the outside, because there is not HER2, we now understand that inflammation plays a big role. So PD-L1, which is a certain marker, often can tell us the role of the immune system. If a breast cancer expresses this marker, if it has a certain level, then it is recommended now, category one, which is to say this is what all oncologists should be doing, we should be prescribing this therapy with chemotherapy. Now, this brings me into the second part of what I was hoping to share with you today. What is the sequencing of treatments? Because as I go into talking about updates, I'm also going to be sharing with you where we should be using these new novel therapies, these new updated treatments. Now that we're talking about markers, and now that we're thinking about PD-L1, we also can look at our own DNA. We are now utilizing genetics, and we're testing to say, hey, are we or is she born with something that is in every single organ of her body, the building blocks of her body, such as BRCA, and if she has a gene that put her more at risk of cancer, and then she developed breast cancer, how can we use her body to help her fight cancer? Knowing that BRCA gene has an inability to repair DNA, drug developers found a way to harness this for good. And with that, we now have a new drug category of PARP inhibitors, or a certain form of targeted therapy. PARP inhibitors are used to fight cancer cells by changing the way that DNA gets repaired. The newest drugs that we're able to prescribe are olaparib or talazoparib. Brand names are Lynparza and Talzenna. These drugs, if a woman does not have PD-L1 on the outside of her tumor, and if she does have a BRCA mutation, it's actually recommended that she start with this for her metastatic breast cancer treatment. Now that we've shared a little bit about new markers like PD-L1 or understanding our own genetics and how medications can be used to help, we can also discuss another drug therapy called drug antibody conjugates. And you heard me a second ago talk about immunotherapy and how we're using the immune system. Well, an antibody drug conjugate is not too different. Essentially, we're using an antibody that is going to be attached to a drug. And by that, we deliver it to cancer cells. I want to pause and think about something that's not cancer-related. For instance, a flu vaccine. You get a flu vaccine. This is remnants of flu that then your body gets exposed to develop antibodies. And that's your immune system that will then fight the flu should you get flu again. So antibodies, or these memory cells, drug antibody conjugates, they mimic this. And by using these antibodies, are more effectively delivering chemotherapy. The two drug antibody conjugates that are being used right now are sacituzumab govitecan, that's a long word, so we often use the brand name Trodelvy, or trastuzumab deruxtecan. Once again, a pretty long word, so we either say TDXT or Enhertu. We were just discussing the sequencing of medication. Provided a woman has the expression of PD-L1, we would have started with the immunotherapy. Provided that she has a BRCA mutation, we should then start also with a PARP inhibitor. But because metastatic breast cancer, it still cannot be cured, we know that as we move forward with treatment, we need to be prepared for what can I give next? What can I give to control cancer? After the use of those, now we are using the drug antibody conjugates. And your oncologist can offer you either Trodelvy or Enhertu. Either of these are now category one, or once again, the preferred, what at least here at the United States, the FDA would recommend to give because we know it has changed tremendously the outcome of metastatic breast cancer. Both of these drugs are very good at penetrating the blood-brain barrier, or in other words, they can go across to the spinal cord and brain, which is very hard to do for most of our traditional therapies. This is where I now want to talk about biomarkers and diagnostic testing a little bit more. A second ago, I was mentioning these other markers, and we're talking about testing, and we're talking about DNA. But with this diagnostic testing, we're also learning about different mutations. And when we order DNA testing or genomic testing on our tumors, we're able to find even more biomarkers. So every woman, we can have a more precise analysis of your tumor. Your cancer is not like the girl, the woman next to you, nor is it like the other woman on this call. Everybody is unique. So by doing genomic testing on our tumor studies, we are able to offer precision in the different therapies that we can offer. Because of this, we've learned about other biomarkers such as MSI-high or NTRK, N-T-R-K, or a RET mutation. Now, these all sound like a jumble of letters right now, but do know that we have a gambit, a long list now, of different biomarkers that we're able to use because drug development has now found ways to target them. So the sequencing of medications, where we start now with immunotherapy, moving then on to our DNA or genomics, and then moving on to targeted drug therapy with antibody conjugates, we can move towards precision, where if we find a mutation, we can go forward with it. This is important because it allows us all to improve our treatment decisions. So in the treatment of triple negative breast cancer in the metastatic setting, it is dramatically different in the last 4 years than it ever has been before. I know I'm shortly going to be running out of time for my segment, so in the last 2 minutes of my part, I want to be able to share what about the women on the call who may have started their journey before 4 years? What if you started your journey before these updated recommendations? If you started your journey 5, 8, or 10 years ago, and immunotherapy, targeted therapy, PARP inhibitor therapy, or drug antibody conjugates were not the first go-to, and instead you were given traditional chemotherapy, there is still an opportunity to utilize these new novel treatments. The treatments, even though they are not in the sequence that I just shared, they still hold value, even for patients who may have been given chemotherapy first. Even in patients who have been given traditional chemotherapy first, still show response whenever we offer these new medications. And I will look towards Dr. Hussein's talk where he will give updates on different clinical trials, but I'm eager to hear what he has to share as well, because we are moving the needle more than ever. And in conclusion, what I'd like to say is that between our new drug therapies, between the way we're learning now, which ones we should start with, which ones will have the biggest impact right from the get-go that will last the longest, and then harnessing your individual DNA, whether it's the DNA you're born with, or the DNA on the tumor, we are making tremendous strides in the treatment of metastatic breast cancer. Thank you for your attention.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Jones. That was such a superb presentation and really set the stage for today's program as the first speaker. And I really have covered quite a bit and look forward to the Q&A as well. So thank you so much. Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. Hussein. And Dr. Kamal Abu Hussein is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Cooper Medical School of Rowan University, Adjunct Assistant Professor, Department of Breast Medical Oncology, MD Anderson Cancer Center, Co-Director of the Janet Knowles Breast Cancer Program, Director of Breast Cancer Clinical Trials, MD Anderson Cancer Center at Cooper. And Dr. Hussein will be addressing clinical trial updates, how research offers additional treatment options, tips to prevent and manage treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, neuropathy and pain, guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, lifestyle and quality of life concerns, and discussion of open notes, and practical strategies to cope with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. It is my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Hussain.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mesner, for this kind introduction, and thank you, Dr. Jones, for this excellent presentation. It really does set the stage before we start talking about the ongoing clinical trials for metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. So I think to address the first topic, which is why we participate in clinical trials, I think it's really important to understand that clinical trials are an integral part of clinical research and at the heart of all medical advances. And the clinical trials look at new ways to prevent, detect, or treat multiple diseases. So the way that we explore any new drugs or new combination of drugs, the way that we explore better ways of using the existing treatments, maybe better dosing, new ways to change behavior to improve health or to improve the quality of life of our patients diagnosed with certain types of cancers, we all have to participate in clinical trials for that reason. The goal of clinical trials is to determine if these treatments, prevention, or behavior approaches are safe and effective. And people take part in clinical trials for many reasons. The biggest ones really are to contribute to moving science forward. They want to help others, but also to possibly receive the newest treatment and to have added or extra care and attention from the clinical trial staff. And the idea of any clinical trial usually starts in the lab, and after researchers test new treatments or procedures in the lab and in animals, the most promising treatments are moved into clinical trials, and as new treatments move through a series of steps called phases, more information is gained about the treatment, its risks, and how effective it is. So there are multiple phases for clinical trials, but typically we talk about four phases. The phase number one of clinical trials is done usually on a smaller number of people, usually less than 100 people, and it is the purpose of this phase is to study the drug or the treatment to learn more about safety and identify side effects. Phase two is when we expand the number of people, so usually a couple hundred people, and it's usually to determine its effectiveness and to further study its safety. Phase three usually is done also on a few hundreds of people, thousands of people maybe, to confirm how effective a drug is, monitor side effects, compare it with the standard or similar treatments, and collect information that will allow the new drug or treatment to be used safely. And then last but not the least is stage four or phase four clinical trial, which is after the drug is approved by the FDA and made available to the public. Researchers track its safety in the general population, seeking more information about the drug or treatment's benefit and optimal use. There's also a set of criteria called the inclusion and exclusion criteria that clearly indicate who are the patients that could be enrolled on this trial and who are the patients that should not be on that trial. Now, when we start talking about ongoing trials for metastatic triple-negative breast cancer and possible updates that are coming up in the near future, you'll see that a lot of those trials are focused on studying more of antibody drug conjugates, and we usually refer them as ADCs. As Dr. Jones explained to us, basically this is a molecule that we synthesize by developing an antibody against a certain marker that we know is present on the surface of the cancer cell, and we link that molecule or that antibody to a chemotherapy particle, and then when it binds to it, this chemotherapy is introduced inside the cell, leading to internal killing of the cancer cell. So it's a more targeted way of addressing cancer cells, hopefully only. So we'll start first with exciting trials that are incorporating the use of one of the antibody drug conjugates we spoke about, sacituzumab govitecan or Trodelvy. And those two trials are looking at moving this sacituzumab govitecan from the second line treatment to possibly the first line in patients with metastatic triple negative breast cancer. Those are the ASCENT-3 and the ASCENT-4 clinical trials. The Ascend 3 is open for either PD-L1 negative patients, so patients that would not qualify for immunotherapy, or patients that are not candidates for immunotherapy because they have been recently exposed to it in the early stage setting. And the patients are randomized to treatment with either sacituzumab govitecan versus standard of care chemotherapy with usual agents like taxanes or a combination of gemcitabine and carboplatin, pretty standard treatment. And the endpoint is looking at something called progression-free survival, which means the period of time that the patient continues to be on a certain treatment without evidence of disease progression. The Ascend 4 is the companion first-line trial for patients who have a PD-L1 positive tumor who are expected to benefit from immunotherapy. So we're randomizing them to either the use of sacituzumab govitecan and the immunotherapy pembrolizumab or standard of care chemotherapy plus pembrolizumab. And again, the endpoint is the same endpoint, progression-free survival, and those trials are potential options for our patients as recruitment is still ongoing. Now, we're going to switch gears and talk about the other antibody drug conjugate that was mentioned, which is Enhertu or T-DXd. And this is a drug that is known to have excellent ability to treat metastatic HER2-positive disease. However, I would like to focus on it specifically in the HER2-low setting. And this is a subset of a lower level of expression of the HER2 protein. And even though much of the work that has been done in the HER2-low population has focused on the hormone receptor-positive disease, but there is a component of patients that have hormone receptor-negative disease. That is also classified as HER2-low, and that reflects about a third of this category. So this is a very sizable number of patients. And previously, we used to consider those patients as triple negative, but now we call them HER2-low. And the name of the trial is DESTINY-Breast04, which is a large randomized study that tested the use of this in HER2 or T-DXd in patients who have HER2-low disease. And the patients were able to have up to two prior lines of therapy for metastatic disease, and they were randomized to either treatment with the Enhertu treatment or chemotherapy. And now I remind you that the majority of those patients on the trial, 89%, were hormone receptor positive, but there was a small arm which was triple negative. Now we know it's ERPR negative and HER2 low. Those represented only 11% of the study population. The study overall favored the use of Enhertu compared to chemotherapy with an improvement of about 50% in progression-free survival and in the overall survival of patients. That was quite dramatic and definitely practice-changing. This is an agent that is known to have great activity in patients who have brain metastasis, which is excellent. Now, what about the side effects of this agent? Really, we see high rates of nausea and vomiting. So nausea happens in more than 75% of the patients, and about 40% or so can experience vomiting. When it comes to low white blood cell counts, we really don't have much concern. It's usually well tolerated in that aspect. One important thing to keep in mind for this agent is a special interest type side effect called ILD or interstitial lung disease. So basically that means possible inflammation of the lung tissue known as pneumonitis, which can really present with any respiratory symptoms from no symptoms or maybe simple cough to significant shortness of breath, need for oxygen and respiratory assistance. So try to pay special attention to any form of breathing problems during that treatment. We monitor our patients very closely with a very low threshold to hold treatment, starting steroids, order CT scans, and try to identify that if it happens. This was detected in a range of maybe 10 to 15% of all the patients treated with that agent. However, the high grade or grade 5 interstitial lung disease events were fortunately very uncommon, less than 1% on the DESTINY-Breast04 clinical trial. There are currently ongoing trials for the use of the Enhertu in combination with other drugs for the HER2 low ERPR negative patients. So now we're seeing it being combined with capecitabine and oral chemotherapy, also known as Zolota. Also, there is Enhertu plus paclitaxel and durvalumab, and there's also Enhertu plus capivasertib, which is one of the oral targeted therapies for patients that carry a certain mutation called the PIK3CA mutation. This is studied also in the hormone receptor negative setting. So now we've discussed two very promising antibody drug conjugates, and the question comes up about sequencing those agents. Now, at ASCO this year, we saw some real-world evidence about sequencing of antibody drug conjugates. I will tell you that those are retrospective data, so we're looking back, but they're not prospective. We probably need that. But I think a big takeaway from this particular data set and others is that there is less activity with the second antibody drug conjugate. Whichever one you might use in the second line, it does appear that the first antibody drug conjugate seems to have longer and more durable benefit. And we do see practice variations of some provider sequencing one antibody drug conjugate immediately after the other, and others using chemotherapy in between as a buffer before they resort to using a different antibody drug conjugate. So currently there's ongoing prospective studies that are trying to answer this, trying to identify what are the mechanisms of, you know, resistance, and whether it is resistance to the target of the antibody drug conjugate, or is it resistant to the chemotherapy portion, which we refer to as the payload. So I think this is very important work, and we need to support that. The Begonia trial is another very important one that is looking at the first-line metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, and has multiple treatment arms of exploration. What I'm going to share with you are two of the antibody drug conjugate arms and combination with immunotherapy. So first, we'll look at the T-DXd or Enhertu plus durvalumab, which is another immunotherapy. And that is in the first line setting. And Begonia is often looking at safety, but we get signals of efficacy. So overall response rate in this trial was 60% in about 60 patients being treated on that arm. And this was not limited to patients who were PD-L1 positive. It is for all comers, all patients with metastatic triple negative breast cancer. There are some concerns definitely about safety, and about 17% of the patients had to completely discontinue treatment, 50% had to dose reduce. There is an incidence of interstitial lung disease, so we're always trying to find a nice balance between how effective a treatment is and how safe it is. I want to talk about another antibody drug conjugate. This one is called datobotamab deruxtecan, or Dato-DXd. And this is an agent that is directed against a certain target called TROP2, which is heavily represented on the surface of the metastatic cancer cells, with a similar chemotherapy payload to the T-DXd. So Dato-DXd has been studied in early phase trials for patients that were heavily pretreated. 71% of the patients on this trial that I will discuss right now have had three or more prior lines. Many of them have already seen sacituzumab govitecan or other antibody drug conjugates against the same target, the TROP2 antibody, and we have seen early signs of benefit and very different adverse event profiles. So we're not seeing high rates of interstitial lung disease. Rather, we're seeing a side effect called stomatitis, which is inflammation of the inner lining of the mouth. And about 13% of the patients had high-grade stomatitis and some ocular or eye-related issues. It's good to know that we're developing regimens for steroid oral care that has decreased the stomatitis significantly. Another trial called the TROPION-Breast02 is a first-line trial in the metastatic setting looking at the Dato-DXd versus investigator choice chemotherapy, and this study is now fully accrued globally, and we are eagerly awaiting results. The EV-202 trial is a study that is looking at another antibody drug conjugate called enfortumab vedotin. This one has a different target called Nectin-4, and a different chemotherapy called MMAE. And so this is being studied in a trial, and there is a I'm going to focus on the triple negative cohort of that trial, which was about 42 patients, and these folks have seen prior lines of chemotherapy. On average, the benefit rate was about 60% and an overall response rate of 20%. This study did not meet the pre-specified response rate that they set for that trial as a primary endpoint, but we do see signals of activity here with an improvement in, with a promise really in the median progression-free survival and the overall survival. And side effects from this agent, we do see some fatigue. Rash is a very common side effect, and nausea. Quickly, there are two trials. One of them is called the TBCRC-048 trial, which looked at exploring the role of olaparib. As Dr. Jones mentioned, the use of oral PARP inhibitors, which are known to be effective in patients who have germline BRCA mutation, they're trying here to expand its use beyond that cohort of patients. And the final analysis was reported out on an expanded subset of patients who had germline, another mutation called PALP2. 24 patients in this cohort, but quite a high response rate of 75% overall response rate in germline PALP2 patients. And the clinical benefit rate was quite high at 83%. And another cohort of interest is a cohort of patients that carry a somatic BRCA mutation, so not on the tumor, but on their normal body cells. And so here they looked at 30 patients, and there was a response rate of about 40% and a clinical benefit rate of about 50%. So I think now we've seen these data confirmed with olaparib, and there are similar series with another oral PARP inhibitor called talazoparib, looking at patients who have somatic BRCA mutations as well. This is quite important, and it allows us to expand the use of such oral medications that are relatively well-tolerated and quite effective for a larger cohort of patients. Last but not the least, we have the TBCRC-058 trial that is looking at the role of androgen receptor blockade. And yes, I said androgen receptor blockade. So in triple negative breast cancer, some of them express androgen receptor positivity. And here they are recruiting patients with triple negative breast cancers, either with the old definition of ER, PR, 0%, or people who are low expressors, so they express the ER or PR receptors less than 10%. And those are patients that have positivity for the androgen receptor using a test called immunohistochemistry with a 10% or greater positivity, and they're randomizing them to the use of androgen receptor inhibitor enzalutamide, known as Xtandi, which we use heavily in treatment of our patients with prostate cancer, or enzalutamide and another medication called mifepristone versus a standard of care chemotherapy. And this trial is recruiting patients and is being who are being treated in the first line setting, now the second, and soon to expand to even include the third line. This concludes the updates for the ongoing trials. Now, I was asked also to touch quickly on side effects. And I will try to be as brief as possible because I'm running over time, but I would say that the one major difference when we are treating patients with early stage or locally advanced breast cancer that is aiming eventually at curing the disease compared to palliative treatment of metastatic breast cancer is the length or duration of the treatment plan. So in most cases, the treatment is expected to be ongoing all the time to have good control over the disease, and that makes it really important to focus on keeping side effects to a minimum while providing patients with the most effective treatment that is able to control their disease. So in other words, it is a time where quality of life is a main concern. Nausea and vomiting are among the most common, and so usually we are prescribing a chemotherapy agent when we prescribe a chemotherapy agent that has a high level of inducing nausea. We would give patients anti-nausea medications preemptively before the chemotherapy is administered in order to lessen the chances of it happening, and we also prescribe as-needed anti-nausea medications to be used at home. We talk to patients about food choices using bland diets like toast, pasta, broth, or cereal, and avoiding heavy, greasy food. But again, this is one of the things that keeping a diary to discuss with your healthcare providers is really important. Also, whether it is early onset or delayed nausea makes a big difference for the choice of medications. We talked about mucositis as a common side effect, which is inner lining of the mouth inflammation and development of ulcers. And we do use a mixture of water and salt or baking soda and drinking plenty of fluids, usually to mitigate that. I plan to talk about more, including neuropathy and chemobrain. I don't know, Dr. Mesner, do I have a couple minutes more?
Let's talk about quality of life or practical strategies. What?
Sure. So one important aspect of quality of life is chemobrain. And I would say that chemobrain is a term that is used to describe the mental fogginess that patients sometimes experience during or after chemotherapy treatment. And this could make it hard to concentrate or remember things. Of course, it happens to varying degrees from one patient to another, but sometimes it could be quite frustrating where our patients report not being able to remember certain words or directions or inability to multitask anymore or remember phone numbers or names. And there are multiple factors that could contribute to the development of chemobrain. And some of the most important things is poor sleep, constant fatigue, feeling anxious, depression because of the uncertainty, living with metastatic breast cancer, chronic stress, poor nutrition, lack of physical exercise, or under-treatment of pain. Also, over-treatment of pain can cause the same symptoms. It could be a side effect of medications like ones that we use to mitigate nausea or sleep aid also. Just like we discussed in the prior symptoms, it's really important to understand what is the major contributing factor. So for example, if there's underlying stress or depression, getting professional help to address that could be helpful in clarifying potential underlying factors. We talk to patients about keeping their space organized, trying to focus on only one task at a time, so that they can stay on track. And sometimes if this symptom is very intrusive, patients could benefit from a referral to a neuropsychologist. And that is a specialist that has special training in addressing issues of connectivity between the brain and behavior. Some medications have been tried, like modafinil, also known as Provisual, to try and improve concentration. Last one sentence about the use of telemedicine, and I'm sure that probably at this point, most, if not all of us, have had telemedicine visits with our providers. I think they are quite helpful. I don't know that I would rely on them 100%. However, it's always nice to use them in the right context. There is nothing that will take the place of a face-to-face visit, being able to sit together in the same room and do a physical exam. However, telemedicine visits could be quite an excellent supplement to those in-person visits to discuss test results, follow up on symptoms, or even address simple concerns that are happening after starting a new treatment. If anything, I feel that now we have an additional effective method of communicating with our patients. Besides phone calls, portal messages, we now can have a video call, and maybe a good use of this technology is to address open notes where patients get access to all of their test results and office visits at the same time that we see them. And many times this needs to be reviewed together rather than the patient having to read their own CT scan or bone scan results on their own at home. At this point, thank you all very much for listening, and I will stop and back to you, Dr. Mesner.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. That was just a wonderful presentation. You covered a lot of topics, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Haley Dinneman. Ms. Dinneman is a lawyer by training, and she's co-founder and executive director of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. And Ms. Dinneman will be addressing the three programs and services of the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, She'll go over with you their helpline, how to email them, and their website as well. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Dinneman.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you also to my fellow presenters and, of course, to all of you listening today. This teleconference is one of many programs offered by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. We have many TNBC-specific educational materials that are available in print and also as free downloads from our website. These materials have special sections addressing issues of particular importance to those of you living with metastatic disease. We work really hard to make sure that you can find relevant information and practical guidance in all of our materials, so please check them out. Our website, tnbcfoundation.org, offers two free and TNBC-specific clinical trials matching services that we're told are much easier to navigate than other portals. One of them is specific to metastatic TNBC. Our website also has a TNBC news section and online discussion forums. Our other online resources include two private TNBC Foundation Facebook groups so that you can easily connect with thousands of women who are living with TNBC. These resources are here to help you and, of course, to remind you that you are not alone. Additionally, we have a number of monthly Zoom meetups for our community, Metastatic Mondays, Tuesdays with TNBC Friends, and Thursdays with TNBC Friends. And in partnership with TOUCH, the Black Breast Cancer Alliance, we have an additional monthly Zoom meetup specifically for Black women. Our community Zoom meetups give you regular opportunities to connect with your peers and with the foundation as well. Also, this December, we will be at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium to bring you information about new and emerging TNBC research, and that, of course, is of particular importance to those of you living with metastatic disease. If you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, X, or visit our website, you'll get regular updates and be able to register for these and all of our other upcoming programs. So once again, thank you for joining us, and I'll now turn the program back to Dr. Messner.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Dinneman. That was a wonderful presentation. It's a wonderful resource for any of you. Most of you probably are familiar with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, but if you're not, it's a great organization to connect with. So thank you so much. Thanks. And our next speaker is Ms. Cassie Spector, and Ms. Spector is the Breast and Gynecological Cancers Program Coordinator at Cancer Care. She's an oncology social worker as well, and she'll be discussing how to find the financial, emotional, and social support to cope, Cancer Care's free programs and services, Hopeline, and website. And I will turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Spector.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. As mentioned, my name is Cassie Spector, and I'm the Breast and Gynecological Cancers Program Coordinator, as well as an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. My role includes working with those both diagnosed with metastatic triple-negative breast cancer and their family and loved ones, as well as developing programs and initiatives for Cancer Care's Breast and Gynecological Cancers Program. The Triple-Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care have partnered together to ensure that those diagnosed with TNBC have access to free psychosocial services and support. The Triple-Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has also generously funded the TNBC Helpline, which provides callers with access to comprehensive services. Some of those services include resource navigation services, counseling, educational workshops, publications, and limited financial assistance. By calling the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Helpline, individuals are connected to an oncology social worker who is aware of the physical, emotional, and practical challenges that may arise when diagnosed with metastatic TNBC. There are many aspects of a breast cancer diagnosis that can be addressed through psychosocial supportive services, including making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, clinical trials, and communication with one's medical team. Individuals diagnosed with metastatic TNBC may choose to supplement existing social networks by joining a support group or engaging in counseling. Many hospitals, treatment centers, and nonprofit organizations offer supportive services. Joining a support group in particular can offer the chance for metastatic TNBC patients to speak to one another and gather information and gain support. Cancer Care offers both NBC-specific and TNBC-specific national online support groups, which are moderated by oncology social workers. These online support groups aim to reduce feelings of loneliness, anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of hope and empowerment, and provide practical information about treatment and resources, as well as can address ways to communicate with one's medical team and loved ones. You can register for an online support group through CancerCare's website. So if you go to cancercare.org and select our services and then choose support groups, you'll find all of our online support groups. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns through one's treatment. Please know that if you're encountering such financial hardships, there are organizations that may be able to help you. CancerCare offers resource navigation services, which is a short-term, strength-based approach to serve patients and caregivers affected by cancer nationally. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them with resources, referrals, and financial assistance. If you're interested in learning more about the services the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and CancerCare offer, I encourage you to call the TNBC helpline, which is 877-880-8622. Our oncology social workers can share additional information about our services and can also help you explore ways to connect with others, including joining a support group or financial assistance resources. It's been such a pleasure to be part of this workshop. Thank you so much for your attention, and I'll now turn it back to Dr. Mesner.
Oh, thank you so much, Cassie. That was just a wonderful, Ms. Spector, that was such a wonderful presentation and lots of resources. I know there'll be questions to you during the Q&A. And now we're going to move right on to the Q&A, and I'm going to ask Rob to explain to you how to pose the question, and we're going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Rob?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
And the question for Dr. Jones, should the current treatment I am on not work, is it possible to use a previous chemotherapy? The reason I ask is because it killed all of the cancer, but the cancer returned a few months later.
That's an excellent. Thank you, Dr. Mesner. That's an excellent question, and it's one that I'm sure more women on the call are probably thinking to themselves. Can I reuse a therapy that at one time was really effective? And sadly, the answer is no, and it's not the reason why you may think. Yes, that therapy worked when it did, but eventually cancer does find a way to bypass the medicine that you're given to then grow, which then would prompt us to change therapy. If we tried that therapy that was at one time successful, and that's wonderful, we're grateful for the time that it was successful, you will not find the same success the second time. But please rest assured, with the new ongoing clinical trials that Dr. Hussein shared about, and with the use of precision medicine with what I shared about, together you will find more options than ever before.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks. And a question for Dr. Hussein. Can a patient who had HER2 positive and has a recurrence can become triple negative breast cancer? Can it change the breast cancer?
You know, that's another great question. And living with metastatic breast cancer, I think patients go through a long journey of very lengthy treatment protocol, and it's only a matter of time. Every time we change therapy before the cancer cells outsmart the treatment and find a way to grow. Part of the way that they become resistant to the current treatment is losing sensitivity on a certain receptor expression, whether that is the hormonal receptor or the HER2 protein. And yes, we do see sometimes that cancer that expressed a positive HER2 positivity for the HER2 marker on their original cancer, losing that and becoming HER2 negative over time. Same thing can happen for the hormonal sensitivity, estrogen and progesterone. So it is possible for patients to become triple negative over time.
Okay, thank you so much. And I just want to let everybody know that we have part two of this program taking place on November 13th. It's for caregivers coping with the stresses of caregiving when your loved one has triple negative breast cancer. And we have another question. for Dr. Jones. Are there clinical trials examining CAR T cells in metastatic triple negative breast cancer?
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you for this question, but I'm actually going to lean into Dr. Hussain to see. I know presently at our institution we do not, but that doesn't mean that there may not be. Dr. Hussain, do you have any insight for CAR T therapy with triple negative breast cancer?
Not very definite information. I know there are. Basically, just for our audience who are not aware of how that works, but basically, it involves engineering T cells to target specific proteins in the cancer cells. We do use this heavily in a lot of hematologic malignancies, but there are ongoing trials both for HER2-positive breast cancer and triple-negative breast cancer. I don't know of any data or any results yet, but a lot of those trials are early phase clinical trials, and they are present in large academic centers in the country. You can look it up based on where your geographic location is at.
Excellent. Thank you. So for Dr. Jones, can you discuss providing support for a patient who keeps trying new treatment regimens? I don't want to feel like I'm giving false hope, but still want to stay optimistic after recurrence.
That's an excellent question. So what I'm really hearing is this question is talking about how do I carry forward when I'm getting on medication and then that medication stops working, and that you don't want false hope, but how many different medications can you take? How many medications can I take is the question that you're thinking in your head. Well, I would have to say that there are a great number of treatments that are FDA approved, and then even beyond FDA approval, or that is to say medicine that has gone through enough trials that we can say this is approved and insurance should pay for it. Then the second piece there's also clinical trials that you could go for that Dr. Hussain was sharing. There are drugs that we believe are going to be the next standard of care. But I think what your question is really asking is how do I move forward without giving myself false hope? And in truth, there is nothing but hope when it comes to having new therapies and ways to treat. But if your quality of life, if the way you feel, if it feels terrible taking medicine, and if the medicines are worse than not taking medicine, then it doesn't matter if we have 20 drugs available. For you as a woman, for you as that one person, that's when you can say to yourself, no, I've tried enough medicine. I'm ready to live the rest of my life, however that may naturally be. And with that, we would move forward with your caregiver and with your support team to talk about transitioning to just taking care of support and symptoms like pain and fatigue.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I'm now going to ask our speakers to provide takeaways. I'm going to start with Dr. Jones, then Dr. Hussain, and then Ms. Spector. So Dr. Jones, do you want to go first?
Yes. I want to thank everybody for their attention on this call. And I think the largest takeaway that I would love to share is that the biomarkers, the diagnostic testing, even the DNA testing for you as a woman or you as a man if you're on this call, they are tremendously different today than they even were 4 years ago. And to me, I know that it's going to be even better, even more different in the best way possible in another 4 years. So my takeaway is, I see nothing but hope in what we used to say was hopeless and not to me. And I applaud every single metastatic breast cancer patient on this call. Thank you, Dr. Messner.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Hussain?
Yeah, you know, I really would say that the presence of the antibody drug conjugates, or as we call them, ADCs, has really changed the whole field significantly. And this has expanded the treatment landscape for patients with unresectable locally advanced or metastatic breast cancer. And it has provided and continues to provide new therapeutic options where treatment, traditional treatments with chemotherapy have failed. So I think the field of antibody-drug conjugates has a lot of potential, and I believe it's still in its early phase. So stay tuned for more ADC-related advances. And hopefully there's a lot of hope moving forward.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. And Ms. Spector.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. My main takeaway would be to know that you're not alone, know that there's support available, whether you're looking for emotional support or financial support. There's organizations available to assist you and help you find that support that you're looking for, or lean into your treatment team, see who you can connect with on your team to be able to get you connected with the support that you're looking for. So really know that you're not alone, and there's so much support out there. It's just about finding what's right for you.
Oh, thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been phenomenal. And I also want to thank our participants, because actually we have done a program like this before, but I have to say today's program was particularly exceptional just because of the questions that people asked on the call and the way our speakers addressed those questions. The sense of hope and the sense of new treatment availability that wasn't here when we did the program last year. So I basically want to thank you all for your participation today. I do want to say a few words, though, about for those of you, so there were many of you on the call, we couldn't take everyone's question. So for those of you who asked a question, for those of you who had a question in queue, I would like you to go back to your treating healthcare team and please ask them your question. Remember, you've learned a great deal from today's program, and I want you to take what you've learned, go back to your treating healthcare team, and ask the question again. Remember, you have more information from today, and you also may ask your question in a different way based on what you've learned today. Also, I do want to remind everybody that it is very important to know who to contact on evenings, weekends, and holidays. It seems like those are times when, if you call during the day, usually someone will pick up the phone in the office and connect you with somebody who can help you. But on evenings, weekends, and holidays, it's often hard. You need to know ahead of time, so plan ahead, who's going to be available to answer your questions. Because that's when things seem to happen. People have questions at those times. It's really important. And so I do so appreciate your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.